3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Welcome back to the official podcast of the Seattle Mariners. Gary Hill here. Thanks for being here as well. You can find the podcast at Mariners.com. It's new home. Oh, I'm excited about this one. This is a monster podcast. This one is giant. I am pumped about this one. A big series coming up for the Mariners this weekend in Boston. The big three going against the Red Sox. And I think we have a podcast to match the occasion. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little preview of the three-game series in Boston. I'm going to get you, you're going to hear something that will get you jacked for the start for Felix Hernandez going against the Red Sox. So we'll take a listen to that coming up. Jason Stark from ESPN is going to be here. It's going to air over the weekend too, but since you're a podcast listener, subscriber, you get a chance to hear it before it actually airs on the radio. So there you go. Jason Stark will be here from ESPN. Great conversation. He's going to weigh in about Felix Hernandez and the Hall of Fame. Yeah, wait till you hear that coming up. Also, does Edgar Martinez belong in the Hall of Fame? Ken Griffey Jr. A lot of good stuff coming up with Jason Stark. Robinson Cano will be by. Shannon Dreher sits down with Robinson Cano, connected to the podcast yesterday and the story with Larry Boa. So that comes up, and an awesome interview with Torrey Hunter. Aaron Goldsmith talks to Torrey Hunter. And of everything we've heard about Felix Hernandez from the opposition, Torrey Hunter may have the very best comments about Felix Hernandez from an opponent. You don't want to miss that. So this is a big podcast. I feel like after you listen to this, you're going to be ready for an exciting weekend of Mariners baseball. So here's what it looks like. You don't have to wait long today. 4:10 first pitch will take the air at 3 o'clock across the network for the pregame show. King Felix Hernandez, 13-4, and is just sparkling 1.99 ERA. Going against righty Joe Kelly, who just came over from St. Louis. He's 0-1, a 5.29. And then Saturday, breakfast with the M's, 10:30 first pitch will take there at 9:30. Chris Young, he's going to go against Brandon Workman for the Bo Sox. And then on Sunday, again, another 10:30 first pitch will take there at 9:30 for the pregame show. And then 8:30 for Mariners Magazine. Hisashi Iwakuma against Alan Webster. So the big three going at Fenway against the Red Sox. So the big three going in Bowtown. Red Sox, Mariners, Felix Hernandez, the first game of the series. Right now, the Mariners 8 back of the leaders, the Angels 6 back of Oakland for second place in the division and the first wild card. And right now, right on the heels of the Tigers, they are just half game back at Detroit. All of a sudden, too, you look around, the Yankees and Blue Jays are 4 full games back. Cleveland is 4.5, and then at Tampa at 7, White Sox 10. So, you know, you look at it, and more, Oakland, Detroit, the Mariners separating themselves just a little bit. Mariners a chance to overtake Detroit for the second wild card tonight as Felix Hernandez will take the hill. I want to run this back at you, too. Just get pumped for the game tonight. Felix Hernandez on the mound facing the Red Sox, first of three after an off day. Playoff talk. This is going to get you ready. This will get you ready for the King taking the mound tonight.
He is King Felix, and he reigns supreme.
Felix turns, fires away, swing and a miss, strike three, a changeup at 90 miles an hour. 15 punchouts for Felix Hernandez today at Tropicana Field. He has dangled that carrot in front of the Rays all day long, and they have tried to take a bite each and every time.
I mean, he's the king of Seattle right now.
Here's the 3-2 pitch, check swing, strike three called.
Holy smokes, a fastball on the outside corner, and there is strikeout number 8. The King is on his game.
He is so confident, man. He has got it going on. He really does, and for good reason. I mean, that's half of it. It's showtime, man, when he's pitching.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix. Barton with a Looney Tunes swing, and he goes down hacking.
That's all, folks.
Here's the set by Hernandez. He delivers, swing and a miss, strike 3, and they got it. Strikeout number 1 for Felix Hernandez, and they're having a good time in the left field corner tonight.
He just competes, I think, number 1. I mean, if Felix didn't have near the stuff he does, I mean, he'd still be, you know, an ace pitcher, just how he competes. So it's fun to play behind
he
him.
He delivers, swing and a miss, strike 3, and awkward, almost a little bit of an ugly swing there from Raul. That's the 10th punch-out tonight for King Felix.
I think he's confusing people. He's certainly confusing me. I don't know what to call his pitches. If I'm having trouble telling what the pitches are, hitters must be having a lot of trouble. And when the fastball and changeup are coming in almost the same speed, but one of them has the bottom falling out and the other one doesn't, it's got to be incredibly tough to bat against him, given the fact that every now and then he will reach back and throw 95 when he needs to.
Nearly 40,000 in the King score, bobbing up and down the pitch. Strike 3 called. He got him at 93 miles an hour, and count them up. 10 strikeouts for the King tonight against the A's.
You will bow before him.
Swing and a miss for strike 3. 12 in a row retired by Felix Hernandez, and that is strikeout number 7 tonight. How about that?
He will make you look silly.
The pitch, a check swing. It goes around. A changeup. That's 14 in a row sat down by Felix.
Well, you know, I keep looking for superlatives to describe this guy, but again, he was just outstanding. Very precision-like. He knew what he wanted to do, when he wanted to do it, and his ability to read bats was just tremendous.
Felix ready. Here comes the 1-2. Swing and a miss. It's brought by Zunino, who applies the tag, and there's number 11. Felix strikes out the side of the 7th inning, and he has flat out owned the A's tonight at Safeco Field.
They had no chance against
him. They didn't.
It didn't matter. He had all 4 of his pitches. He could throw them whenever he wanted to.
Swing and a miss and a changeup for strike 3. And there is strikeout number 6. One away for the Rangers here in the top half of the 9th inning. Holy smokes, the King pitching at his Palace Safeco Field tonight. He has been tremendous.
No, it was, anytime you face him, he's always tough. He's one of the best pitchers in the league for a reason. Yesterday, he was just putting stuff where he wanted to, as usual. But his changeup rides in, looks like a strike, then is acting like a split finger. So, you know, he's just dominant.
Felix sets the 2-2 swing and a miss. Strike 3. 14 punch outs for Felix Hernandez today at St. Pete. And that is a new career high for the King, as he has handcuffed the bats today of the Rays. He's thrown away the key, and the Rays have been baffled all day long by King Felix.
It's been fun for a lot of us. Yeah, you know, great stuff, and you know, good competitor, wants to be out there and pitching all the time. I feel like made us look pretty bad.
So Lloyd McClendon going out to make the change, and listen to this ovation coming up for Felix Hernandez. The Supreme Court in session, almost 40,000 fans tonight here at Safeco Field wearing yellow T-shirts. And that will be it for Felix after 7-plus innings tonight. He strikes out 11 along the way. Here's the ovation for the King.
The way he was dominating, the way he was getting the crowd into it the whole time was pretty special. And when he's on, and I think he proves that pretty much every game.
The windup and the 2-2. Strike 3 called, and there is strikeout number 9. He has fanned the last 3 Indians in a row. 2 outs for the Tribe here in the top of the 8th inning. So 9 strikeouts for Felix.
He's a marvel to watch. I mean, he's such a tremendous competitor, especially when you see a man getting a scoring position with a game on the line. I mean, he's really incredible.
The 0-2 to Rios, swing and a miss. Strike 3. Rios comes up empty as Felix strikes out one of the best hitters in the game with the go-ahead run 90 feet from home. And Felix has now spun 17 consecutive scoreless innings.
Was that his changeup? I don't know.
The windup and the 3-2 pitch. Strike 3 called, and there is strikeout number 8. Felix Hernandez strikes out. Nick Swisher looking at strike three. Career strikeout number 1,839 and counting, getting closer and closer to that Mariner all-time mark set by Randy Johnson. He'll eventually get there.
What kind of reaction do you want? Whatever you want to call. That means I'm pitching pretty good, right?
There it is. I hope you enjoyed that one. Mostly from the first half, a lot from that 16-game streak. Heck, a 16-game streak took most of the season. I mean, it goes back till May. But I'm already working on the next version of it, and it is – oh, there's some great quotes in it. So hope you like that. Hopefully that gets you ready for tonight, gets you pumped up, as Felix Hernandez will toe the rubber for the M's. So now we're going to turn our attention to Jason Stark. You know him from his work on ESPN. Great insight on baseball, both past and present. And we talk both past and present with ESPN's Jason Stark. And we have a special guest joining us now. It's Jason Stark, senior baseball writer for ESPN. You can see him on Twitter, at JasonST. Also author, Wild Pitches, Rumblings, Grumblings, and Reflections on the Game I Love. That book just came out. We'll talk about that as well. But Jason, the first thing I want to get to is something that caught my eye in Baseball America and on your blog at ESPN.com. And a player had asked you if there's any starting pitcher right now that is in the Hall of Fame. If they walked away from the game right now, would they be in the Hall of Fame? You said no, and I agree with you. But what starting pitchers right now do you think are most likely to get into the Hall of Fame?
I really agonized on this, on who has the best shot versus who's closest. To me, there are really two pitchers who are on a Hall of Fame track. One is Clayton Kershaw. The other is Felix. And if you ask me who is closer, it's got to be Felix, doesn't it? He's, I mean, at 28 years old, already won a Cy Young. Seems like he's clearly going to win a second Cy Young this year. Win total mounting. You know, if you look past wins, which we really ought to do in this day and age, I mean, Felix is clearly as good as it gets in this sport. And, you know, he's proven to be durable and adaptable and really smart about the way he goes about it. You know, it's something would have to go wrong for him not to wind up in the Hall of Fame, but he's 28 years old. He's got a long way to go.
When you look at him and what he's doing this year in particular, where does he match up historically and what he's doing right now?
Well, I mean, to have an ERA under 2 on August 21st in the American League, you don't see that much, you know? Other than maybe Ron Guidry, we're into the territory where it's before they messed with the mound back in 1969. I mean, in my experience, the only seasons that I can recall remotely like this were the Pedro seasons right after he got to Boston. Mm-hmm. Just incredible dominance, and doing it not just with stuff, but with the mind. Felix really gets it now. He really understands the art and science of pitching. It's so fun to watch.
Now, speaking of the Hall of Fame, whenever Hall of Fame conversation comes up, there's one guy that we talk about in Seattle quite a bit, and I know you're a Hall of Fame voter, and it's Edgar Martinez. In your opinion, is Edgar Martinez a Hall of Famer?
In my opinion, he is. You know, my first book was a book on the most overrated and underrated players of all time, and I made Edgar the most underrated DH of all time, and I argued then that he was a Hall of Famer, and I still think he's a Hall of Famer. But one of the problems that I ran into this year is, you know, if you're somebody like me and your feeling is that when you look at the PED era, it is so hard to sort out who did what and what we ought to do about it, that you vote for at least some of the quote-unquote steroid guys, you wind up with a ballot all of a sudden that has more than 10 names. That has never been my problem, and I've been a voter for over 20 years. But these days, and especially this winter, I think I wound up with 15 names I wanted to vote for, including Edgar. And so I've never been somebody who plays games with my ballot. I always try to look at the player, look at his career, look at his accomplishments, look at his era, and decide for myself whether that player was a Hall of Famer or not. And if I decided he was, I voted for him every year. This was a year where I had to use ballot strategy as a guide. And if I'm not mistaken, it meant having to leave Edgar off. And that was really painful for me, really painful, because I totally believe that Edgar is a Hall of Famer. I mean, one of the numbers I've used a lot is, you know, OPS plus, adjusted OPS, which adjusts your OPS for your ballpark and your era. And Edgar's OPS for OPS plus for his career was 147. Meanwhile, probably the second greatest DH who ever lived is Paul Molitor. He only had two seasons where he had an OPS plus of 147 out of 21 seasons. And so it's clear to me that Edgar's a Hall of Famer. I just hope we can figure out the whole ballot mess and remove this rule that limits us only to 10 names.
Yeah, he's going to be tough for him right now. Certainly a log jam. Now, let's shift to Mariners' current day. They may have a couple of Hall of Famers when it's all said and done with Cano and Felix, but right now you look at what they're doing in the wild, wild American League playoff chase. Where do the Mariners fit in your opinion, and what's going on in the American League?
Well, I just saw them because they were in Philadelphia, which is where I live, and I do see a team that has evolved over the course of the year, and you know, probably spent a lot of this season wondering how good it was, and now knows it's for real and it's a legitimate contender. But in my blog yesterday, I tried to point out that you know, despite the bats that Jack traded for, it's still incredibly difficult to try to get to get to October the way the Mariners are trying to do it. And you know, among the stuff that I pointed out was that there's only been one American League team in history that made the postseason with a lower on base percentage than this Mariners team. That was the 1906 White Sox, way back in the dead ball era. Okay. If you look at the Mariners' run scored pace, they're on pace to score fewer runs over any full season by any American League team that reached the postseason since the 45 Tigers. They're last in the league in OPS. No American League team has ever finished last in the league in OPS and made it to the postseason. So thankfully there's a second wild card, and thankfully there's a really dominating pitching staff. Yeah. But when you're this offensively challenged, it leaves you very little margin for error. My suspicion is that the Tigers or Royals or whoever doesn't win the Central is going to wind up being that second wild card. I guess what we don't know is, what does the Garrett Richards injury do to the AL West?
No, that's a great point. I think it's pretty exciting in the American League, too. You have the Mariners, of course, that they haven't been there in a while. You have Baltimore. They haven't won their division since 97. The Royals haven't been there since they won the World Series in the mid-80s with George Brett and all those guys. And Toronto's in the mix, and they haven't been there since going to the World Series as well. It feels like a lot of fun with a lot of new blood right now in the American League.
Yeah, I agree with you. I appear in this Thursday night Baseball Tonight's Seamhead show with Tim Kirkson and Buster Olney, and we did a show kind of previewing the second half, and at one point we talked about what we were most looking forward to in the second half. I made that exact point, that the three teams that have had the longest postseason droughts are those three teams, and they all have a shot. Now, Toronto's really trying hard to give that back, but the Royals and Mariners October chances, they're alive and well.
No, it's exciting. And you wrote about another former Mariner recently, too. This was a great piece as well. A what if, because that's something we've kicked around as well, about Ken Griffey Jr. And boy, when you look back at what he did, what if, and when you talk about his health, what were your findings? What did you think when you asked the question, what if, on Ken Griffey Jr.?
Well, I mean, on one hand, it's almost hilarious to think you're talking about a guy who hit 630 home runs and started, 13 All-Star games, and we're asking, what if?
I know.
Incredible when you think about it, right? But then you look at the 12 trips to the disabled list, and that's why we asked the question, because suppose he had been as healthy as, I don't know, pick a name, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Cal Ripken, how many home runs would he have hit? I think there's a real chance that he would have been the all-time home run champ. And so I had my friend David Vincent, who has every home run ever hit on his laptop, help me compute how many home runs he would have hit if he had stayed healthy. And we decided that if he'd been completely healthy, he would have hit another 147 home runs. And that would have given us, wow, or given him 777, which is more than Barry Bonds, 15 more, right? Now, obviously, does anybody stay fully healthy for 22 years? That really doesn't happen. But even if David Vincent was arguing, we really probably need to subtract a good 50 to 75 homers from that. But then we're still in the area of 730, 740, 750, 755. And so would Ken Griffey Jr. have just walked away from the game if he was sitting that few home runs away from Barry Bonds? I'm guessing not, right? So
right.
I think there's an excellent chance that if this guy had just not been quite the kamikaze that he was, especially early in his career, we'd be looking at the all-time home run champ right now.
That's a great point, too. And those are some prime years that he was cut down in as well, where he could have really racked up some big numbers. No, it was great stuff. And before you go, I want you to tell us about your book, too. Wild Pitches, Rumblings, Grumblings, Reflections on the Game I Love. Just came out in May. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, this book's kind of my greatest hits collection. Okay. It was a way for me to look back over about 14 years at ESPN and weigh in on all my favorite stuff about baseball. And people are always telling me this book made them laugh, it made them think, it made them argue with their friends. I'm in favor of all of that. I had a chance to look at my favorite people, my favorite memories, my favorite October moments, my favorite October champions, talked about what was the greatest World Series game of all time. I don't think it was the Bill Mazeroski game or the Carlton Fisk game or the game that people often talk about. There's a piece in there about what did Cal Ripken's, the game where he passed Lou Gehrig in the last game at Tiger Stadium, tell us about why baseball history is different from the history of the other sports. There's a strange but true feat of the millennium a piece in there that answers the question, how did Benji Molina manage to hit a home run and not score a run on his own homer? So there's lots of fun stuff all through this book, just like that.
Well, Jason, we certainly appreciate the time and appreciate your work as always. Thanks a lot.
Hey, enjoyed it. Thank you very much for having me on.
There it was, Jason Stark from ESPN. Certainly enjoyed that conversation. And speaking of enjoying conversations, you are going to love this one. Aaron Goldsmith with Torrey Hunter. And boy, he breaks it down, not only to talk about Lloyd McClendon, but breaks it down like no other when it comes to Felix Hernandez. Here's Aaron Goldsmith.
Torrey, last year Lloyd McClendon was your hitting coach. This year he's in the opposing dugout. What did you enjoy last season most about working with Lloyd?
Man, Lloyd was awesome, man. You know, whenever you needed him in the cage and to work on your swing, he was there, and he had some good information for, you know, an old guy like me. But we had some laughs, you know, a lot of laughs and a lot of baseball talk and life talk. And man, the guy's just awesome, man. I'm pretty sure the guys over there love him. You know, he's a guy you can really go and approach and talk to him about anything, and he will keep it in-house.
They do love him. And you're not that old, but you are in your 18th season. What is it that you attribute all your success for this long of a period of a time to?
Just, you know, for me, I try to make adjustments. You know, I'm always learning. You know, I mean, I've been playing 18 seasons, but I'm still learning, you know. And once you stop learning in this game, stop making adjustments, it eats you up and you're going home. But for me, I'm a guy who wants to learn, who wants to, you know, get better. You know, no matter how many years you play in this game, you can always get better. And even when you're out of this game, you're still going to learn something. So I choose to do that.
You have 9 gold gloves on your mantle. What's the best piece of outfield coaching advice or tips that you ever got?
Oh, man, there's so many. Well, you know, one thing Kirby Puckett used to tell me all the time, and, you know, I was like 18, 19 years old. He said, hey, don't give anybody hits. Even if you don't have any hits, don't let nobody else have any hits, even if you have hits. So he just said, just don't let nobody have any hits. You should be stingy out there. Don't, even if you have friends, you really try to take those hits from those guys. So that's the best advice that I think one of the coaches has ever given me.
Tor, you've had a chance to face Felix Hernandez a number of times in your career, and actually over a sizable number of at-bats. You're over a 300 hitter against Felix. That doesn't mean that those at-bats were easy. What is it that makes facing Felix so tough?
Man, this dude is nasty. Trust me, I do not know how I get those hits off of him. And somebody asked me the other day, they said, hey, do you like facing Felix? There's not a one player in this league that likes facing Felix. He is one of the nasty, if not the nastiest pitcher in Major League Baseball. He can get you to swing and miss with that changeup anytime. And then the fastball, he throws a changeup off the fastball. It looks the same. So it's kind of deceiving for us right-handed hitters for sure. And he's just a smart pitcher. I've seen him grow from, you know, 20, 19 years old and into a man, and he's scary. It's not fun. It's uncomfortable every time. So every hit I've gotten, I had to battle for.
Can you take us inside the batter's box? What does a Felix Hernandez changeup look like?
Felix Hernandez, his changeup looks like, you ever seen a cartoon Bugs Bunny when he was on the mound and he throws it and the guys are like, 1, 2, 3, you're out. 1, 2, 3, you're out. That's what it looks like.
Tory, it's a real pleasure to catch up with you as always. Thank you so much for the time.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
There it is, Tory Hunter. That was outstanding. Outstanding stuff there, Aaron Goldsmith and Tory Hunter. Now, boy, it's just one after another. Here we go. Shannon Dreher with Robinson Cano. And Robinson Cano in this conversation, he's going to start out, if you remember the story yesterday, it's on the podcast yesterday if you want to check it out too, Larry Boa, who helped Robinson Cano out as a younger player in New York. He was a coach when Cano first got to the big leagues and really helped him out. Cano gives him a Rolex watch, and Larry Boa told a great story in the podcast yesterday. So here's Robinson Cano, who started the conversation talking about Larry Boa.
Yeah, he's a guy that knows how to play the game, and guy that great coach, great mentor guy to have around, especially when you're a young player. You know, he's really helped me out a lot, and you know, until those days, I keep all those things that he always used to tell me and always remember. He's very passionate about the game. He wants to win. He loves to win. So, you know, those are the kind of person that you always going to remember, because in this game, you always remember who really helped you out. Now when you had that contract, now when you became somebody, especially when you're coming up, young guy, and guy that had that, the one really help you out and, you know, tell you you can be one of the best. You just got to do this, do that, and you know, so those are the things that you have to appreciate in this game.
What did you take from him? What was the biggest thing that you remember today?
Well, always expect a back throw, even ground ball. Never feel like, never take anything for granted. Always think that it's going to be a backup, back throw on second base, or so you already prepared. So if they made a back throw, so you mentally prepare if he's coming. That's why most of the time you see me when they made a back throw, always, you know, I'm always there, or never take me anything like late, or that's why, because I always had that in my mind that I want to expect the bat throw and always, you know, prepare yourself before the play happens.
You know, he played with Ryan Sandberg too quite a bit. Did he ever talk to you about Ryan Sandberg?
Well, you know what? No, we never talk about Ryan Sandberg. So, you know, all I can tell you, you know, you remember then Sosa was playing with Chicago. I think Sosa was young when Sandberg was there. And then, you know, we get to watch the game, and I hear a lot about Sandberg, how good he was and what kind of player he was.
Great hitter, great
and
second
the funny
base.
Thing, you just got traded from the Phillies to the Cubs.
They got traded together.
Got traded together.
You've got a big day coming up on Thursday. Your foundation is holding a summer classic, and it sounds like this is a lot of fun. You have a team, CC Sabathia has a team. Tell us a little bit about this.
You know, it's more for charity, like foundation, to help kids or, you know, that really needs help. And it's going to be a fun game. We just gained, you know, bring a good show to the people and fans. Not again that, I got to win, or your team got to win, or my team. Just to have fun and do the good show for the fans. And, you know, appreciate that Kevin, Durant, Melo's coming, Neo, DJ Khaled, you know, some of those celebrity guys. And I really appreciate that and, you know, looking forward to that.
I know Felix is a big basketball person. Are you a big basketball fan too?
Yeah, I am. If I wouldn't be a baseball player, I wouldn't be a basketball player.
Really?
Yeah, and you know, when you always win one, when you always play one sport, you always trying to play the other one. Like you can see basketball player here that used to be a baseball, they would love to be a baseball player. Like Russell Wilson, he was the second baseman, but he ended up being a football player. So I mean, it's all those things that you know, you always love another sport because you always wonder how good you're gonna be if you play the other sport.
Did you try it when you were younger?
Well, yeah, I tried, but I mean, we never had a chance in Dominican to make it to the NBA because you have to go through high school here, go to college, and see if you had the chance.
Now, who on your team here would be the best basketball player?
Ooh, I would say Kevin Durant, the MVP.
No, not
Oh, you mean him, I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, well, you know what? I hear Phil, well, I know Jackson used to play.
Yeah.
Austin, and I would say Austin Jackson.
You actually might have a good team if you put all this together. You got Chris Young.
Chris Young, yeah, who can be the center. Yeah, you're right. Could it be a great team?
Hey, last question. Just tell us a little bit about what RC22 does and what that does not only for other people, but what it does for you, too.
Well, for me, you know, I come from a poor, not only poor town, but a poor country. I grew up when things got a bit, you know, I had a chance. They had everything I want. I had the food on the table, had nice clothes. And I grew up with kids that they don't have anything. They went to broken shoes to go practice. And, you know, those are the things that I always remember had in my mind. I see guys had to clean shoes to support their family. And those are the things that I had in my mind. They say, you know what, I can help my people in my time. And that's what I want to do.
There it is. That was a full podcast. Hope you're ready. Mariners taking on the Red Sox for 3 over the weekend. Look forward to talking to you on Monday after a full weekend of Mariners baseball. We'll see where they are after the weekend. And again, you can reach me all weekend long, GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. And of course, on Twitter, the conversation will be constant at Gary Hill Jr. Should be a lot of fun this weekend. Until then, I'll leave you with this.
You know, we found out firsthand, you know, why they call him the king and why, you know, he is as good as he is. And his changeup was pretty tough to pick up.